You're listening to Cosmic Perspective. I'm your host, Andy Paneros. Today, my guest is Ivano Del Prete. Ivano is a science historian, amateur astronomer, has taught the history of astronomy at Yale University, and is presently a research scholar at Columbia University. Ivano is here to talk about what various civilizations believed about the existence of life on other worlds. Ivano, welcome.
Thank you, Andy, and good morning, everybody.
Ivano, how far back in recorded history did people believe that life existed on other worlds?
Well, the belief in the existence of life on other worlds is actually much more ancient than most people probably think. And the fact is, as soon as human beings were able to conceptualize our world as a body in space, together with other bodies that share the same nature, immediately they started discussing about the habitability of these other worlds. This happened for the first time 25 centuries ago in ancient Greece. As far as we know, the first philosopher to discuss the habitability of other worlds was Anaxagoras, who taught in Athens about 450 BC. Anaxagoras believed that the sun was a fiery stone and that the moon was made of the same material as the earth is made of. And so, since it shared the same nature as the earth, also the moon could be inhabited by living creatures and plants. And what is more most interesting is that Anaxagoras was not the only one to have these ideas in the antiquity. Actually, the notion of extraterrestrial life, so as to speak, was very widespread in the antiquity. And a great number of philosophers and philosophical schools shared in different ways more or less the same idea. For example, Epicurus, who founded a very important philosophical school, believed that the universe is infinite and eternal, and it is made of an infinite number of atoms. And so the Earth and life itself is just a combination of atoms. And since the universe is infinite, he thought that there must be somewhere else an Earth like our own, and inhabited by living creatures and arguably even intelligent life. There were even philosophers that didn't share this idea, and the most important one was the famous Aristotle, who was enormously influential in Europe during the Middle Ages and Renaissance. Aristotle believed that there is only one world in the universe. There is only this Earth, and there cannot be another Earth. So one planet, we inhabit this planet, and there is nothing similar, nothing like this in his universe. However, this was only his own personal opinion and the opinion of his school. Many others thought that life was widespread in the universe.
When did the concept of the Earth being the center of the universe come about? Is that back in antiquity, or did that come later on in history?
Now, generally, most philosophical schools in the antiquity believed that the Earth is actually in the center of the universe. And when they talked about other worlds, they intended more other enclosed universes. The idea is that our Earth is at the center of a sort of bubble whose skin is made by the sphere of the fixed stars. And outside this universe of ours, there are other universes with other Earths inside, with their own skin made of fixed stars, exactly like our own, or slightly different, or even very different. We cannot see these other worlds, but we can deduce their existence by reasoning.
Were these other Earths supposed to be identical to our Earth, or...?
No, not necessarily. Okay. No, not necessarily. Speculation about that was just speculation, because the ancients didn't have any experience of these other worlds. They deduced their existence by reasoning. But in general, the idea was that these worlds can be even very different from ours. Sometimes, they also believed that inside our own universe, there can be other inhabitable worlds, especially the moon, which is the only celestial body besides our own Earth, of which you can see a few details on the surface, even with the naked eye, The other planets are just dots in the sky. For example, historian Plutarch wrote a dialogue around the year 100 BC, and in his dialogue, a few friends meet for dinner, and during the dinner they start talking about the moon and what is the meaning of the spots that we can see on the moon. And so the conversation moves on the habitability of the moon, and the author, the historian Plutarch, clearly believes that the moon is made of lighter elements than the Earth, because the Earth is at the center of the universe, so heavy stuff tends to fall down. But the moon is not that far from the Earth, so it's very close to the center of the universe too. And so, even though it is made of lighter elements than the Earth, it's still a similar world with a thinner atmosphere, but still a world that can harbor life and even intelligent life.
This concept of the Earth being at the center of the universe, did that carry over into the Middle Ages?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Especially because, it was shared by most philosophers in antiquity, and there were a couple of philosophical school and astronomers who proposed a sun-centered universe, but there was no evidence for that. So the general idea was that the Earth is at the center of the universe. Until the invention of the telescope, very few people believed otherwise. And in the Middle Ages, that was especially true because Aristotle became by far the most authoritative philosopher and the most important source in science, much more than it was in the antiquity. And Aristotle believed that there is only one world, and that this world is at the center of the universe, and more importantly, that there are no other worlds like ours. What is interesting is that while most scientists would simply follow Aristotle, well, theologians took exception. And they said, hey, wait a moment. What does it mean that there cannot be other worlds like ours? God is the Almighty, right? He can do everything he wants. He's the omnipotent. So if he wants to make other worlds, he must be able to do that. You cannot say that it is impossible that other worlds exist. Indeed, the Aristotelian idea that the Earth, our Earth, is the only possible world, was condemned as heretic by the Archbishop of Paris. This happened in 1277. So if you are a good Christian, and you want to be a good Christian, and you don't want any trouble in this world, we have to consider the possibility that other worlds may exist. And so the scientists of the time were forced, in a way, to think at how this could be possible within the frame of Aristotelian physics. And so this stimulated a great debate on the plurality of worlds that took place in the Middle Ages.
And later on, what was the Catholic Church's stand on this? I know we go back to the invention of the telescope, and I know Galileo's point of view had an effect on what his belief had an effect on the Catholic Church and their beliefs. Is that correct?
Yes, it is important here to make a distinction between the position of the Earth and the universe and the possibility that other worlds can exist. Other sort of bubbles with an Earth inside and other forms of life in the universe. There was never a strong theological opposition to the existence of other worlds or other forms of life on these worlds, even intelligent life, as what happened in the Middle Ages shows. I mean, the Church wanted and asked philosophers to consider the possibility that other worlds may exist. So this is a different matter from the idea that the Earth is the center of the universe. What happened with the invention of the telescope is that the idea that the Earth is not at the center of the universe became much more likely. Galileo never had a definite proof of the motion of the Earth, that the Earth moves around the Sun and not the opposite. But his observations made that very likely. And on the other hand, now that it was possible to actually see that the moon has craters and mountains and plains, maybe seas and rivers, it became pretty obvious that the other worlds in the space are similar to our own. And this boosted an incredible literature on the existence of life on other planets. And in the 1600s, the telescope was invented in 1609. And in the following decades, discussion on the existence of extraterrestrial life became commonplace. almost every natural philosopher, almost every astronomer, including, for example, Kepler, believed that there can be life on the moon, especially, and even on the other planets. And it is maybe not well known that among the most vocal supporters of extraterrestrial life were some prominent New England Puritans, especially Cotton Mather, who is especially known for his role in the Salem witch trials, which took place in 1692. He was the theological consultant for the Salem justices, and he certainly had a responsibility in the executions that took place there. But just to give you an idea of how complex can be the history of ideas, this man who believed in witchcraft, who was absolutely convinced that the devil operates in the world, was also an enthusiastic supporter of Newton, for example. Newton's book on gravity was published in 1687, only 5 years before the Salem witch trials. And Cotton Mather, in his theological view, believed that every object in the universe has a theological meaning. So, for example, when he thought of comets, he observed that how Newton demonstrated, comets have a very elongated orbit. So at times they are very close to the sun and must be very hot. And at times they are very far from the sun and must be very cold. He also observed that the hell is described at times as very cold and at times as very hot in the scriptures. So his idea was comets used to be planets exactly like our Earth, with inhabitants and intelligent inhabitants who were capable of sins. So after their Armageddon, God simply changed the orbit of these planets, turned them into comets, and made of them hells for their sinful inhabitants. So this New England Puritan was a staunch supporter of extraterrestrial life.
The telescope then became more advanced, and people's ideas began to change again. When did things change between what the church's stand was on this Earth being the center of the universe, and then science changing all that? When did that all come to be?
Well, in the course of the... let's say first that Copernicanism was condemned by Catholic Church in 1616, but other Christian confessions didn't have this problem. And Cotton Mather, for example, proclaimed that we Puritans, we Protestants, are much better than Catholics, who still cannot accept modern science. We accept modern science. We're born witches, but we are enthusiastic about Newton.
Enthusiastic and witches.
But we are enthusiastic about Newton and modern science. The decrees that condemned Copernicanism were never repealed until recent times. But in practice, around 1740, they were no longer effective, and the Catholic Church accepted that their interpretation of the scriptural passages that talk about or that suggest that the Earth doesn't move must be changed. It became a big deal, but it didn't have to be. Copernicus' book was published 70 years before Copernicanism was condemned. So it was not automatic at all. Copernicus dedicated his book to the Pope, who accepted it without any problem. And so the condemnation of Copernicanism by the Catholic Church was a very complex and messy affair. And we don't have to think that Christianity was necessarily against the motion of the Earth. There are only a very few passages in the scriptures that suggest that. And New England Puritans, that certainly... were not atheists, or were certainly very religious people, didn't have any problem with that.
I find that very interesting. That I would have thought, I didn't realize that Copernicanism was accepted for that period of time. So it appears that this time that we talked about is a very short time in history, almost with the way the churches stand and the Catholic Church. Short period of time.
Yes, basically, I mean the. It started to become a really delicate point after Luther, after Christianity broke and Catholic Church felt under siege, and especially the Catholic Church wanted to defend it at all costs, its prerogative as the sole authorized interpreter of the scriptures. So the point is, we are the only one who can say whether or how to interpret, for example, Joshua's episode in which the prophet stops the sun and says, "Stop thou, sun." Okay, how do we have to interpret it? Literally or figuratively? We are the only one who must decide that. You, Galileo, cannot tell us what the correct interpretation of the scriptural passages.
You're listening to Cosmic Perspective. My guest today is historian Ivano Del Prete. We've been discussing what civilizations believe about the possibility of life on other worlds. When we come back, we're going to discuss the search for life on other worlds in the late 19th and early 20th centuries. We're back from our musical break. You're listening to Cosmic Perspective. I'm your host, Andy Poneros. My guest is historian Ivano Del Prete. We've been discussing what civilizations believe about life on other worlds. We started with ancient civilizations, and we've discussed the Middle Ages, the invention of the telescope, Galileo, Copernicus, and different religious opinions from the 1600s through the Puritans. Ivano, next I'd like to ask you about Italian astronomer Giovanni Schiaparelli and U.S. astronomer Percival Lowell. In the centuries to come, many improvements were made in the making of telescopes. This allowed Schiaparelli and Lowell to further study the possibility of life on other planets. Maybe you can enlighten us a little bit about their findings and their discoveries with these new telescopes.
Yes, the telescope remained a quite limited instrument for the exploration of the surfaces of the planets until the second half of the 1800s. The moon remained the only planets on which clear details of the surface could be observed. This changed during the 1800s, when better telescopes were fielded. In 1877, a new generation of telescopes was put at work on Mars that came very close to the Earth. And an Italian astronomer, Schiaparelli, that you mentioned, observed on the surface of the planet a network of rather straight lines. That was pretty weird, because if you look at the map of the Earth, or take a look at Google Earth, well, it can easily tell the meandering motion or path of a river from the straight lines that is a canal or a highway. Nature doesn't draw straight lines. Men do. Intelligent life does. And so some astronomer argued that if you see straight lines on the surface of Mars, they must have been traced by some sort of intelligence. Now, if you look at Mars through a telescope, what you see is a planet that looks very much like a desert. The colors of Mars are very similar to the colors of terrestrial deserts observed from the space. But there are also a couple of bright caps at the poles and a few darker areas. So the image of Mars that telescopic observation suggests is of a dry planet with some water available. So many astronomers thought that what was happening on Mars is that an advanced civilization built a global network of canals in order to redistribute the scarce water available on the planet. And that was really the beginning of modern search for extraterrestrial life.
And when did Percival Lowell begin his observations of Mars?
Percival Lowell started observing in 1894. Lowell was a very rich Bostonian. His family made lots of money in the textile industry. And in Massachusetts, there is still a place named Lowell, who used to be one of the main centers of American textile industry. He also studied astronomy as a young man before embarking on a diplomatic career. He visited the Far East, and he was a very good writer, and he wrote very successful books of his travels. In 1894, he spent a considerable part of his considerable substance to build an observatory in Arizona. in Flagstaff, a place that is still called Mars Hill. And he devoted it to the observation of Mars. He wanted to to understand what was happening on that planet. And he became soon the most vocal supporter of the theory of the existence of an intelligent civilization on Mars. Let's not forget that this is the epoch of when great canals were built on the Earth. The Suez Canal was opened in 1870. The Panama Canal was opened in 1914. We are talking right these years. Yeah. And, you know, the brain works a lot based on analogies. So why not making canals on Mars if you need to bring water from one place to the other?
In history, how far apart were their findings? Lowell?
Oh, they were more or less contemporaries, actually. Lowell started observing later. For most of his life, he was not a professional astronomer. But Schiaparelli died in 1911. Lowell died in 1916. When they died, they were both convinced that they were still right, that there were canals on the surface of Mars and intelligent builders of these canals. And an astronomer argued in those years that the existence of canals on Mars is undoubtedly a sign of intelligence. The problem is, what side of the telescope the intelligence is? As it turned out, the intelligence was on the closed side of the telescope, that close to the mind of the observer. These canals are a construction of the mind. Under the effort of observation on the fleeting planetary images, where you try to work out the finest details on a very tiny disk through the turbulent ocean that is our atmosphere when you observe at high magnification, and the eye try to decipher things that must be there, but it doesn't understand exactly what they are, it tends to build straight lines. This happens in an entirely unconscious way. And I happen to observe these canals on Mars that were in the same place as Schiaparelli observed them, and they were very similar. And if I hadn't known what they were, it would have been very difficult to convince me that I was just having an optical illusion.
They're not man-made. They were actually...
They are man-made, actually. Yeah. in a sense, they are absolutely man-made.
That's true. They are.
They are not made by Martians, but they were man-made.
This, I understand there was quite a debate over this, and this debate inspired H.G. Wells to write War of the Worlds.
Yes,
is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. The War of the Worlds by H.G. Wells, a British novelist, was first published in 1897, and it became the mother of all modern science fiction. Wells, that was a very good and successful novelist. He wrote other books like, for example, The Invisible Man, that is also pretty famous, The Time Machine. And he also wrote this book that is probably the most famous, The War of the Worlds. And he draws from contemporary debates in astronomy and imagines that these Martians get sick and tired of fighting against an hostile nature and building canals over canals to try to use the last drop of available water. And they decide to leave their planets and with their advanced technology just move to another planet that is rich of water. Unfortunately, it is our planet.
Since 3/4 of the surface of the Earth is covered by water, it's a good place for the Martians to pick.
A good place, probably shocking for the Martians to live in a planet with so much water available, but much better than their old dying world. It is also interesting to note that Wells was sort of a socialist. This is also the time of labor movement, of the spread of socialism against working class, of great strikes, and the elaboration of a socialist utopia. Now, it is also the time where the British Empire and European colonial empires in general reached their maximum extension. And Wells was a British. He lived in the leading colonial power of the world. And the ideology of the time was that the white man was justified in conquering the rest of the world because of its technological superiority, which proved its overall superiority. So why shouldn't the Martians do the same with us, which are like beasts compared to their vastly superior minds. They just come here and they kill us like a beast. And maybe they eat us. Yeah, and then Mars suggested, became a subject of socialist utopia, because many observed that a network, a global network of canals, implies a global government that can take care of it. Now, socialist theories predicted that eventually national governments, which are the products of capitalist society, would be taken over by a global government all over the Earth. So they thought that what happened on Mars prefigures what will happen on the Earth when a socialist society will finally take place here. And after all, Mars is a red planet, isn't it?
Yes, it is. You're listening to Cosmic Perspective. Our guest today is historian Ivano Del Prete. We're going to take a short musical break. When we come back, we're going to be talking more about this very interesting subject, what civilizations believed about the existence of life on other worlds. You're listening to Cosmic Perspective. Today's guest is Ivano Del Prete. We've been discussing what various civilizations believed about the possibility of life on other worlds. Ivano, up to this point, we've talked about observations and beliefs of extraterrestrial life of different civilizations, but there are people that believe that we've been visited by this extraterrestrial life. There are also people that claim they've seen these life forms and spacecrafts.
Well, my experience as a historian makes me a bit skeptic on these sightings or on this belief, because just comparing it with beliefs that happened in the past and that we now discard as fantasies, it seems to me that this is just our modern version of myths that mankind always had. In the Renaissance, for example, every naturalist, I mean great naturalists, people that would be Nobel Prizes now, described unicorns, described sirens, mermaids, tritons, and they quoted sightings made by reliable people, sailors, captains that knew their stuff, that knew the sea and the creatures that inhabited it. And looking at that, they had much more evidence for the existence of mermaids or unicorns or gryphons or dragons than we have for the existence of aliens today, or at least extraterrestrials that are visiting the Earth. So I'm not saying that it must be false, mm-hmm. and it must be just fantasy. Or no, I'm not saying that. Just saying that my experience as an historian makes me very prudent on that. And I also know that there is a vast corpus of literature about extraterrestrials that visited the Earth in the past.
Yes, Van Däniken is one, I believe.
Yes, I also read their books, and I have to say that if you want my opinion mm-hmm. as an historian, that is a bit more worth than my opinion as an exobiologist. There is not the slightest piece of evidence, or not even hint, that suggests that ancient civilizations interacted with extraterrestrials. There is absolutely nothing. And I know that there is this vast literature, and the evidence that is described there is really laughable, frankly. It is very different to say that the ancients believed in the existence of the extraterrestrials and to say that they were visited by extraterrestrials, or that they themselves believed that they were visited by extraterrestrials. This is really a modern thing. The belief in extraterrestrial life is not. It goes back 25 centuries in the past and as a continuity towards the present day. But I've never seen in literature from ancient Greeks to 1947, any discussion of us being visited by them. Simply, space flight was not in the cards. It was conceivable that other creatures could live, even intelligent creatures could live on other planets. It was not conceivable that they could travel the abyss of space to us. So this is something that became possible in our mind when space flight became a reality, or at least a possibility.
your research has been done from antiquity to the early 20th century. In recent history, research that has been done through the Hubble Space Telescope tells us that we have more than a billion galaxies in our universe, with billions of stars in each galaxy. Space telescopes and ground-based telescopes have discovered planets revolving around other stars. Some of them may be Earth-like. And it's also possible that life may exist in our own solar system. The Mars exploration rovers discovered that salt water may have flowed on Mars more than a billion years ago. The Curiosity rover, Mars Science Laboratory, is presently searching for the existence of life past or present on Mars. And the Cassini mission has discovered hydrocarbons, the building blocks of life on its moons Enceladus and Titan, and these moons may have underlying saltwater oceans. So the belief and search for life on other worlds continues. Ivano, thank you for being on Cosmic Perspective today and sharing your knowledge with me and our listeners on this very interesting subject. I hope to have you come back and visit us again on the show someday.
Thank you, Andy. Bye to everybody.
Clear skies.
Clear skies.